Hello and welcome to episode 46 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today we're talking about yard and picnic games. We'll talk a bit about traditional outdoor games, but we'll also dive into bringing the tabletop games outside. But first, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Giljam, Shane Paul, George, and Adam Harrison.
Thank you, Josh. Also, a thank you to all of our other patrons as well.
Whoops, I forgot that bit.
Josh just doesn't appreciate them as much as I do.
Damn it. I do. It's lies, I tell you.
So, first announcement, we are going to have a new giveaway. We have a giveaway every month. The July giveaway, I'm going to give something really cool away.
Especially because it's July.
It is July.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm giving away yet, though.
It was just the way you said it. It just sounded amazing.
July. It's July 4th. Now you're going to make me say this.
I can't help it. It's the improv workshops I've been going to. If you ever hear anyone mess up, you have to like heighten it and like expose it.
I see. This is
That's why I hate improv.
A whole new twist on the podcast. We won't ever get past the announcements again. But in all seriousness... We're as serious as we can be. I am leaving for Dice Tower Con tonight. As you hear this on July 4th, I am flying out. We're actually flying on the eve of July 4th, so we're going to look down and see fireworks as we fly.
Oh, that's really cool.
I hear it's going to be cool, but I'm like all ready to be disappointed and looking down, and either there's clouds or no one's doing fireworks on Tuesday or something.
Yeah.
But it could be really cool. Okay. It does relate to our giveaway, though. Because at Dice Tower Con, there's going to be a lot of publishers there that are bringing new games that are not yet released. So something there is going to be the giveaway for July. I just won't know what it is until next week. But if you want to enter now, you can. Because let's be honest, you guys are all just entering to get something free. You don't care what you're entering for. It's okay. I know this. You know this. We're all happy. But we're going to change the way that we do the entries. So for a little while, I was doing it kind of a form on the webpage, and that was sort of trying to lighten my load on how to manage that. It really kind of turned in, from our perspective, this is our being Josh, Kitty, and I talking to the listeners while this is a complicated conversation.
Less complicated than you're making it.
Yeah. Maybe. Okay. So I'm drinking coffee right now. We're getting there. From our perspective, it was less engaging and like less interactive with the people who were entering the contest. You just kind of enter a form and it's kind of impersonal. So I am going to change it back to email. The email that you enter, though, needs to be very specific so I can actually filter on the subject. So the email subject is July giveaway. Email us, July giveaway. All you really have to do is say, hey, I want to be entered. And that's all you need to do. You're entered. If you want to give us some feedback, a quick hello or, you know, any kind of information on the podcast, things you like, don't like, anything there, that's always welcome as well.
We read them all.
Completely not necessary. Anything you put in an email, unless you specifically say, hey, don't read this on the air, could be read on the air. So just keep that in mind. But I'm not, there's no real requirement. There's nothing special. In fact, if you enter, so if we have a 3-week contest, you can enter all 3 weeks. We'll do week one, week two. I'll be able to see when you type it, when you send it in. So no issues there. All of this information is still going to be on our website. So if you go to tabletopgametalk.com and you click on the giveaway button, all this information here, including the subject. In fact, there'll be a quick link if you click on it and you're computer set up to send email automatically, it'll set it all for you. But yeah, so that's how we're going to do our giveaways. Point being, send us emails, you're going to be entered. Next week, you'll know what you're entered for. We'll do the drawing at the end of the month, and then the next month we'll start it. There's usually going to be a week. I rarely am ready to say, and the winner is, and the next thing you're going to win is this. So it'll be the winner on one episode and announcing what we're going to give away on the next. Yeah, so that's our thing. And that was also my way of saying I'm going to be at Dice Tower Con next week. So if you're going to be in Orlando on the tail end of the week of the 4th of July, let me know. We should get together and play a game, especially if you're going to be at Dice Tower Con. Gen Con, we've mentioned it multiple times. If you're going to Gen Con, August 18th, 6 p.m. is our live show. Go get tickets now, just because it's a room that only fits 40 people. And Gen Con is going to sell out this year. So there's going to be like 75,000 people.
That's crazy.
Hopefully 40 of them will come and see us on Friday. So, and then Game Hole Con, first weekend in November. And I'm going to keep mentioning it because that one's the one I'm looking most forward to, but I'm not going to dwell on it. I will dwell on it occasionally. So on to my favorite segment, Kickstarter games. Well, I'm not going to lie. We're recording this episode early. So our last episode, we recorded on Monday and then pushed out Tuesday. And then we're all going places for the 4th of July weekend. So now we're recording on Friday. So I only had 3 days to look at, well, 4 days, I guess, to look at Kickstarter stuff. And with a short week at work, that didn't actually happen. So no Kickstarter games this week. Sydney is probably happy about that. I blame her. I make it sound like she's the one that makes me not buy Kickstarter games, but that's not it. She doesn't care much. Once the joint account happens, she'll care a lot more.
Oh, yeah.
I still have to wean myself off. I do want to talk about a couple games I did finally play this week, though. One of the things I played was Zaya, Embers for the Forsaken Star, which is the expansion to Zaya. If you've played Zaya, this is a space 4X game, comes with pre-painted ships. Josh, Kitty, you guys have not played this game.
Just glazing over.
Yeah, that's okay. So is pretty much
all of our listeners.
I'm looking
into the tagline, Embers of a Forsaken Star. It's so mysterious.
It's
so
really,
epic.
Well, it is kind of epic. So Zaya is a game that has a few issues with the base game. It's a bit random. It's actually a lot random, but that's not necessarily the problem. There's some exploits you can do. One of the mechanics is if your ship blows up, if you're a level one ship, then you get a new ship next round, no problem. If you're a level two ship, then you miss your next turn. If you're a level three ship, then you miss your next two turns. Well, this is an epic game where it can take like 5 minutes or so, maybe 5 to 10 minutes before someone to take a turn. So you're sitting there, if say it's only 5 minutes, you're playing something fast. So when your level three ship's blown up, you're waiting a half hour before you get to take another turn.
Wow.
Because your ship was destroyed.
That's a bit rough.
It is a bit rough. This eliminates that. So it's like there's a small section of new rules. One of the new rules is if your ship gets blown up, you immediately get to spawn back on your next turn. You just have a damaged ship when you do. It's like, ah, that's great. When you get missions, there is ways of like in the middle of your turn, you would draw these mission cards and then you'd select one. The problem is you're in the middle of your turn and now you're like analyzing these mission cards.
Everyone's just stalled watching you hang out, looking at these cards.
Yeah. Yep. And you could say, oh, I can complete this mission this turn. And then you can say, and then I can get another mission. So again, kind of luck of the draw. So the other big change they made was anytime you land on a point that would give you mission cards, you draw the cards, you put them face down in front of you. And while it's the other people's turns, that's when you're deciding. Yep. So that one's really cool. It adds more tiles. It adds a couple more ships. It does some balancing for some of the level three ships that are a little underpowered. This is an expansion that you would never play without once you add it to the game. Like, it's just, if you love Zaya, this makes it better. And it's one of the, it's a fix-it expansion.
I was going to say, it sounds like it just fixed the problems. Yep. Yeah.
It added a few more things too. It added an economy, so you can't, the trading, there's a little bit more fiddliness with the trading, but it's less exploitable now. If you're doing it, you know, you can still trade. It doesn't like nerf trading. It just makes it so it's not as easy to exploit. It adds much cooler exploration tokens where now your exploration tokens, you need two of them and you turn them in for a victory point when you have two, as opposed to just like randomly finding a victory point. Because the game plays to X number of points, not more than 20, but usually around 15 or so. So finding a random victory point where you're exploring is a really big deal. So now every two exploration tokens can be turned in for either a victory point or for money, and that can help you get yourself going as well. So anyway, that's Zaya, Embers for the Forsaken Star. It's expansion to Zaya Legends of the Drift system. Both of them are available. I bought mine from Amazon. So check it out if you like those Space X games. I also finally pulled the trigger and bought Feast for Odin. This one, I don't know how to describe it besides it's a tile laying game that plays about a half hour per player. It's a $100 retail game. which was why I postponed on it for so long.
Right.
It's definitely a point salad tile laying game. I opened up the box.
This box is huge.
Yeah. There's like 1,000 bits in it. Like, wow. I don't know that I'm exaggerating.
Right. I'm so curious to open this box and look at it now.
Yeah. It comes with two organizing trays. Like, and the trays aren't filled. They're just, here's two full on organizing trays. Cause when you're punching out the bits, don't try to sort those. Like the book says, we gave you the trays because putting those in plastic baggies would be a nightmare.
Wow.
And they're right. But this game has gotten great, great feedback and reviews, and everyone who's played it has loved it. So I'm like, all right, I got to do it. I have to try it out.
It's got that Celtic art style you hate so much.
Yeah. Well, it's done by the same person that did Patchwork. And that's also kind of the, although right. this is Viking, so I kind of like Vikings. Okay. I've grown into Vikings.
Cool.
So that was Feast for Odin. I'll let you guys know on the next episode. I think I'll get a playthrough before the next episode, what I think about it. But yeah. And then I also punched out Sword and Sorcery because that one's the new one. Sword and Sorcery was a Kickstarter game before I got into Kickstarter. And now it's all the rage. And now I find out there's all these Kickstarter exclusives that I could have got, like an extra character and some like
other stuff. Oh, you missed out.
I know. And now I should actually probably just pause the episode and go buy stuff on Kickstarter right now.
No. Right. What are you talking about? This is not happening.
That fear of missing out thing that FOMO drives Kickstarter.
It really is. All right. Let's get off this topic.
Let's go to some feedback about our past episodes. If you have feedback about this or any of our other previous episodes, please email us or go to our Board Game Geek forum, easily found at tabletopgametalk.com/BGG.
Right. Awesome. Well, yeah, we've got some stuff from Aaron, who's talking about our game variants episode. He says, just wanted to pipe in that Magic the Gathering, I think, has one of the most varied house rules or variants of a game I play. There are variants for multiple active players, team formats, varying ban list formats, cooperative formats, RPG formats. It was my go-to game that has every other game built in you could possibly want. He's also pretty chuffed that we mentioned the Forbidden Stars fan-made expansion for extra races. My massive 8-player Forbidden Stars game is still in the planning phase. It must be said, though, the reason why it's the way it is that Warhammer 40K is a Games Workshop IP, and they and Fantasy Flight broke off their relationship while the expansion was in the works. It's not that they don't want to support the game, it's that the intellectual rights rules say that they can't officially do that. And it's a huge shame, methinks.
Yes. I will save for the Magic the Gathering. Nowadays, the Magic the Gathering variants tend to be relatively codified. Like, they're like, this is how it plays, right? And you can say, oh, and I always forget the different various things. But if you're playing at the generals format, or if you're playing it in, you know, typical team format or something, everyone knows what that is. Rainbow decks and commander decks and stuff like that. When I first started playing Magic, this was way back, I think Legends was coming out at the time. And for those who play Magic, you know that's the third expansion. I mean, it was Arabian Nights, Legends, and then The Dark, I think, were the first three. And I was there for Legends.
Like the 90s or something?
This was the 90s or something, yeah. I think this was 94, maybe. But we were making up our own variants at the time because Magic was a 2-player game. So we were like, this is how our table is going to play. We have almost every night, like 7 people would get together and we'd play Magic the Gathering 7 different ways. But you'd build different decks for those things. And how we had fast start rules. You could like draw 10 cards, you just put them all in play. And it's like, well, if I'm going to do that, I'm going to like put the most expensive cards. And if I draw them during the game, that's fine. But if I draw them at startup, man, I'm going to be like, yeah. So it's a good one to call out for variants. And as far as Fantasy Flight and the Warhammer IP breaking off, that makes me sad too. Because the Warhammer card game, I really kind of wanted to see where that went, and it's not going anywhere.
Womp,
womp. Womp, womp,
womp. All right, so from Steve on replacing games in your collection. You guys talked about replacing games in your collection. My game collection is like the Mafia. Once you're in, you are in forever. But that is one of the reasons I'm very selective of what games I get. My family's collection has games that come and go, though. But that is usually due to them getting older and the game is no longer challenging for them.
Yeah, I think my collection's been like the mafia for a while, but now I'm getting a lot of middle management that I need to like clean up, and you have those underperformers that you just need to deal with.
Right.
Take them out back and shoot them. Gotcha. I mean, give them away. Actually, well, occasionally when we do our giveaways, and those who've won will know, I'll just like stick in random games that I've never opened. Like, I'm never going to open this and play this, so hopefully this will find a better home someplace else. It can happen. Fletcher came over, who was a guest host on our drinking games episode, while we were playing Mechs versus Minions this week. And he, his girlfriend was with him, and they're going to have a 7-year-old stay with them for the weekend. And they're like, do you have any games that are good for 7 years? I'm like, yeah, here, here's a big, and I'm filling this, and take this one, and take that one.
To be fair, a lot of the games that you said, I'm not sure are great for 7-year-olds. I think you were just trying to get games out of here.
Those are very true. So the four games that we ended up with, because he saw that I had the Legends of Rift. It's the D&D. It's the Dark Elf with the two swords.
Coffee has not been working.
No, it actually, it's working fine. It's just not working with the actual firing of the right synapses. And it's going to be on... Anyway, so it was one of the D&D Adventure System games. And I'm like, here, take this other one as well, because I actually had two copies of that one. So I gave him Castle Ravenloft as well. And then Sydney's been trying to get rid of Apples to Apples Jewish Edition since I've known her. And Fletcher thought it was funny, so he's like, okay, yeah, I'll take that one, which is fine for a 7-year-old, I think.
That one was the one, eh?
Yeah. And then I also gave him Pandemic Cthulhu, because we have Pandemic, we played Pandemic Legacy. Pandemic, oh, I didn't tell you guys. There's the official Pandemic Legacy Season 2 is like all of the game information. Well, not all the game information, but there's like pictures now, and the cover's out on BoardGameGeek. And
ooh. I'm so excited.
Yeah. When's it getting released? Do we know this?
Probably August.
Okay.
Yeah, probably around Gen Con. So that one will be, I'm like, I'm never going to play this version of Pandemic because I have all these other versions of Pandemic to play and all these other games to play. So I'm like, take it. If you like it, keep it.
Going to have to start practicing my Pandemic skills again.
Yeah.
I'm so excited.
All right. Well, let's talk about going on topic, shall we? So let's see. I'm going to do this thing.
In this episode, we're talking about Yard and Picnic Games. It's the 4th of July. Oh, such a day of mourning. And in the US, that means a lot of outdoor events. So today, we'll be talking about some games that are well-suited for outdoor play. We'll start with more traditional outdoor games, but we'll also talk about how to take some of our favorite tabletop games outside as well.
Yeah, so when I was doing the 4th of July, this is a very American holiday. This celebrates when the Americas broke away from the tyranny of the British people.
Worst decision you ever made.
Just saying, it was our own little Brexit.
Absolutely.
But then I'm like, oh, so I should kind of look at like how many of our listeners are outside the U.S. because for most people, they're not. You know, 4th of July doesn't mean... Now, Cinco de Mayo, the U.S. does this. We take other people's holidays and make them drinking holidays. Sure. Mm-hmm. Apparently, St. Patrick's Day is not necessarily a drinking holiday.
Well, it is in Ireland, but not in the rest of the U.K. So, yeah.
Yeah, we've taken that one. So
we took a lot of Irish people, too.
Yeah,
to be fair.
You did.
That's true.
To be fair.
So about 2/3 of our listeners are from the U.S., the other 1/3 are all over the place. So some Canada, Mexico are fairly close, but Australia's are, I think Australia comes just under like 4th. So it's like US, Canada, Great Britain, and then Australia. So
it's winter for you guys. So this is really timely.
Exactly. But this we're evergreen episodes. This means you can listen to this whenever. And besides my talking about convention stuff, all this stuff is still valid, right?
It's true. Oh,
yeah. At least that's what I'm telling myself. So anyway, I just thought that was interesting. The hosting site we have, we can see geographically where things, so you get this heat map of the world. It's kind of fun. So let's start talking about traditional outdoor games. And I really want to start with lawn darts because no one's ever played it. Probably anyone listening.
I was looking on like an online store where you could buy these types of games, and they had Lawn Darts, and I was like, oh, I've never even sort of even heard of that before.
They don't have like the lawn darts that are actual darts anymore. They're like
a beanbag, right?
It's like
There's like a heavy front. I mean, like, it was actual a UK, spike. I think it was a UK store, though.
Of course, the UK is okay with people losing toes.
Yeah, we're fine with it.
So this is a game. This is one of my earliest memories of playing a game outside. Because these darts, so they are what you would think of.
They're heavy.
Yes.
And they're huge.
Oh, wow. You could really take someone out with these things.
Yes.
It's
that'd be so cool.
Imagine a huge nail at the end of a plastic arrow fin.
No, I...
You know, so basically like a three-pronged dart. And the concept was, you put these little circles in the lawn.
Yeah.
And again... We are not recommending anybody ever do this.
We do not advocate this use.
This is one of the greatest games that never should have been made.
But wait, hang on. We're not advocating anyone play this game.
No. Oh. And you're going to find out why in a second. So these circles are anywhere from like about a foot to 2 feet in diameter.
Sure.
And you put them around and then you toss the lawn dart up in the air.
Yep.
And have it fall down and stick into the ground about 2 inches into the ground.
Right.
And if you hit the circles, you got points.
Right.
If you hit people, you got arrested.
You got a trip to the emergency room. Yeah, right. Like, this was, I think it has, like, the highest incidence of injury of any game ever invented. Wow. And that includes, like, horseshoes, where you're literally throwing horseshoes at people.
Because it works like horseshoes, where, like, I think it's cornhole, but I call it bags. Yeah, where... You're basically throwing it at each other.
Oh, you're across from each other. That's ridiculous. Well,
you're aiming for the circle, not the people.
But surely you should all stay on one side of the circle.
Surely you should.
Yeah. But the official rules don't say that.
This was invented before safety.
Yeah. Safety wasn't a thing at that time.
Right.
So it was recalled.
If you go to Asia these days, safety is still not a thing. So maybe they still play it.
I bet you probably could.
Yeah.
I wish I had the original set because I loved it.
Right.
And I think it was like 6 years old. Yeah. I was like 6 years old. So this was like 1980.
Right.
And it was a big thing. And then it became 1981. Oh my God, what did we do?
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, don't play lawn darts, but still a great story. Now, a version of that, bags or cornhole, whatever you call that.
A version of that at all. I mean, I played it for the first time like a few weeks ago. Our company, I'm temping at Groupon, and they had it set up on the roof. It was great fun.
Yeah, bags?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Cornhole, I know it as. But I mean, we don't have this game in the UK at all. So that's why I hadn't played it. And so, yeah, you're tossing these bean bags at this wooden contraption that has a slope on it.
Yeah,
and
kind
hole.
Of a wooden ramp.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
With
that's
a hole
kind
in
of
it.
Slanted towards you as you're looking at it, and there are holes in it, and so you got to get it either on the slant and stay there or in the hole, and you get more points if it goes in the hole than if you keep it on the slant. But you can like knock each other's bags off. It's like a team game, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Yep. There's two teams, two players to a team. This I feel like got hugely popular in frat houses across the U.S.
I think a lot of these things start out in frat houses
because
someplace.
They're really easy to turn into drinking games, I imagine.
This is just a fun game to play while you're drinking.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be a drinking game. But it is like you only need one hand. So the other hand can be holding whatever you need.
Yeah, we were drinking as well. That's a good point.
Yeah. So, and you just kind of toss. And nobody's necessarily bad at the game.
Well, I didn't know what to do. I was going for the sort of granny shot where I was like holding it with two hands and throwing it really high up, thinking I want it to go up and then straight down into the hole. But that this guy was like a pro, and that was not the way he was doing it.
No, you kind of slide it across.
Yeah, it was a really low kind of straight thing.
Fast toss. Yeah.
I'm just picturing Josh granny throwing a beanbag.
Yeah.
It looks a lot like Tom bowling on Parks and Recreation. If you ever saw that episode of Parks and Rec.
Oh, I haven't.
Where dumb granny bowls his way to like a perfect game. Ron is really mad about it.
We should have an entire page on our website where it's just references to different Hulu videos.
Yes.
That, yeah.
Kitty's I live like, my life watching TV, so everything is just references to me. Yeah. Sorry, guys.
I like she it. Can no, speak in Futurama.
Good.
And you'll never
hear
the end of it.
It's amazing. But no, I think this is a great one. Have you guys played bocce ball?
Yes.
Is it like the game where you have the silver balls and then the little ball and you have to get the big balls near to the little balls? Is that, or yes. Is that not it?
So there's one little ball that you throw first.
Right.
And they're, each person usually has their own color of ball.
Yeah.
And you're trying to get your ball closest to the little ball.
Yeah, I think we call that French bowls. We call it something else, and I think it's French bowls.
Makes sense.
And then
the French play it a lot, especially right. The south of France is huge.
And it's just like in the lawn. It's like not in... Oh, I suppose you could play it on the beach as well if you wanted to.
Yeah, anywhere we can toss balls.
Played in grass, I'd say.
So you can roll the balls.
Yeah.
Because we have, obviously, we have that very British sport, lawn bowls, which is very similar to that game. But the bowls that you roll towards the little bowl are much flatter and squashed. So they kind of look.
Wait, like so you're throwing pancakes?
No. It's not a discus. It's like it's an oval shaped ball. Imagine almost like a tire, like a tire. Right?
Okay.
But it's all solid and it's slightly fatter than a tire would be. Like there's no hole in the middle, but. It's like a disc-y type thing, but it is round too. Yeah.
They're showing the hand gestures, and I still don't understand. So if you're trying to figure it out,
it's like
I'm just going to imagine you take a bowling ball, microwave it, squish it a little bit, and call it good.
Yeah, basically.
But a smaller sized ball.
All right, got it.
Because then you've got that outer bit that's kind of like the equator.
Thing.
Yeah, that equator that you have to roll it along that side. And so it rolls, and you can curve it in, and then it kind of falls over. And then it's like, yeah, it's great.
I need to... That sounds actually kind of fun.
Old people love it. My grandparents used to play it, and they were great at it. They won all these trophies and stuff.
So croquet, we should talk about that.
Yes. This was a huge one in my family. My family would set up a croquet, like, field, I guess you call it.
Yeah,
every summer, and it would just like live out there, and we'd all play.
And there's no standard field to croquet, right?
Yes, there is.
Is there?
Oh. Yes, there's a standard wicket setup. So wickets are the little hoops that you're trying to get the ball through,
like in cricket.
There is, I think wicket it's very similar to like some aspects of cricket,
because
you have the pole, and you start at one pole, and then you go through the field in a certain order, and you kind of, and then you have to hit the pole on the other side. And the first person who gets their ball to the pole on the other side and hits it wins the game.
So it's
like a race.
I never knew that.
So this is a set. It's a croquet set. And it has mallets. And the mallets are basically as long as like a golf club. A little shorter than that, but about that.
It's like somewhere between if you're playing polo or golf.
Yeah.
Like it's a personal.
I've seen the pieces. Yeah. With the hoops
mallet.
That go into the ground.
Yeah. The gates are basically just wire gates, arches.
Mm-hmm. And sort of, in a sort of horseshoe.
And there's some interesting things. So you can hit other people's balls. If you're right next to them, you can stand on one ball and hit the one, which will
only
hit the other.
Only if it's your ball. You can put your foot on top of your ball, not somebody else's.
And then hit your ball, which will then hit the other ball and knock theirs someplace else.
It's a hard move to do, but when you pull it off, it's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
There is a series of books that I read where the family plays like crazy croquet.
Kind of like crazy golf.
And they like set the wickets up wherever they feel like it. They're like putting them on top of tree roots and stuff like that. And the black mallet is called the mallet of death. And everyone's just like, it's a free for all. And it sounds like so much fun that, you know, I want to play it Bridgerton style now.
Great.
You should read the Bridgerton books by Julia Quinn, everyone, if you like historical romances.
And croquet.
They're a great crossover.
Yeah. Because that's a crossover genre that is relatively rare, so that might be your only choice.
True.
Now, I have not played croquet, I don't know, 20 years. Like, is this something you've played recently?
No.
Like,
I feel like it's some like a lot of these games are things you mostly play as a child.
Right.
Yeah. Well, all right. So cornhole, that one is a very common one. Like
true.
that's kind of taken over. You see it like we live in Chicago and pretty much every bar with a sidewalk access has cornhole set up someplace.
I literally didn't know this game existed until I moved here.
Well, you're welcome.
Yeah. No, seriously, it's awesome. I really like it.
Now, there's other games that are kind of taking over like the today's lawn games things. I think frisbee golf is probably one of the more common ones.
So frisbee golf is kind of intense. Like you need to have like a course. Huge,
yeah, this yeah, is like say. Well, it's this is at big, a like a park or something.
Yeah, you have
or
to
an
go
actual
find...
golf course. They often convert them and do.
Yeah,
right? Oh, I've never done that.
Apparently, yeah, they use golf courses to do it as well.
Yeah. So frisbee golf for the people who don't know, you basically have it's usually like a stake in the ground or something you're trying to hit with the frisbee, and it's far enough away where hitting it with one toss isn't going to work. So you're all throwing your frisbee to try to get closer and closer. You go up to where your frisbee is, and then that's where you throw it again. And this works really well at large family reunions and things like that, like big park picnics and stuff. You'll see people playing it.
Lots of large parks will have courses set up ready for anyone who wants to show up at the park to use, or you can set up your own courses at big places. It's a really fun game because you're just kind of playing at your own pace and you keep score, and it's a par game. So there's like par three for this hoop or stake, whatever you call them. I don't know what the goals are.
Yeah, I've never played that official. I'm like, it's always just been
then
like
the low score wins.
That tree's the target.
Okay, we've got like real courses and stuff.
Now I want to go to a course and play frisbee golf for real. Yeah, not really, because
I'm really bad at frisbee.
That's the first game that we've talked about, which actually requires some kind of exercise, even though it's outside.
Wow, it's just walking, Chris.
But what is it's still movement, right?
Right.
Because if you think about it,
croquet requires at least as much walking,
but it's probably, not nearly as big a field.
It's a smaller field. That's true.
And most of croquet is you're just standing there staring at wooden balls on the grass, you know, drinking whatever's in your hand, waiting for your turn. Frisbee golf is a more active thing. You know, that's like people are moving around. I think that's kind of like these outdoor games that have become really popular, the ones that you don't really have to do a lot for.
So I recently saw, I don't know the name of this game or if it even has a name. It's very unofficial at this stage, where it's like you've taken frisbee golf and turned it into a drinking game. You have a tiki torch that you have duct taped the top of, so that it's a platform, and you put a beer on top of that, and then you try to hit it with your team's frisbee, and the other team has to catch the beer before it hits the ground.
Oh, wait, so it's a can of beer that's
not open?
It's a
bottle of beer.
Bottle of beer, but not open?
Oh. Open. They were playing with empty ones, I think, for fun, but I think the real way to play is with a full beer, and when you knock it, the other team has to catch it and drink it.
So basically one team is stood much further away throwing the frisbee, and the other team is right near the bottle ready to catch it.
It's like, it's a team game, so there's two tiki torches set up, so you're across from each other.
Much like cornhole or bags.
Yeah.
Actually, you could do that with lawn darts, too.
Yeah.
Just, you know, an option.
Yeah, that sounds like a great way to involve drinking with death spikes.
That reminds me of another frisbee game that I played last year with my friend Becky. And I'm going to get the name wrong. I think it's just like barrel frisbee or something like that. But it almost is like a trash can, but it's a more stylized barrel. And you can get a frisbee in the top, but also on the side that faces you, there's like a mail slot, like just like a rectangle cut into it. So if you can get the frisbee into that slot, you get a ton of points. But if you get it into the barrel, then you get a few points. And actually, I think if you get it in the slot, you just automatically win or something like that, depending on the rules. But this is also a very, you know, limited backyard game. You don't need a huge park. You're just throwing a frisbee at this thing, trying to get it in the hole. And they pulled it out, and it was a huge hit because it's so easy. Everyone can throw a frisbee, and even if you throw it miserably, it's like still fun, and everyone laughs and laughs and says, "No, I can do it." And then they aren't able to do it either. So there's another game, and I know Josh has one he wants to talk about too. Uh-huh. And I thought it was bocce ball, but apparently it wasn't, because now I don't know the name of this game.
Okay,
so
describe it.
I'm going to describe it. You make a, usually out of like the, what are the plumbing pipes?
PVC
like
pipes?
PVC pipes.
Ladder ball.
That's the one. All right, so ladder ball.
Do you like how fast I got that?
That was so good.
That was good.
I was going to talk about it, so I was ready for it. Yeah.
So ladder ball, you have three rungs, and you make it out of PVC pipe, and it's, usually there's two. Again, you could play on one, but you normally have two.
They're going horizontally or vertically?
There are three it's like a ladder, so there's three horizontal bars.
Okay.
Yeah.
Usually they're of different colors if you buy the official kit of this.
Okay. So is it like guttering on a house almost? Like you've cut it?
No. Think plumbing. It's like 1-inch pipes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the plastic pipes that you see people make all sorts of crazy things online out of these pipes.
Yeah, and then you have, you take golf balls and you attach them together with a cord, and you have 3 per color per team that you're playing, and you toss these things and you're trying to wrap them around or catch them on one of the 3 ladders or ladder spokes, ladder steps, ladder pieces.
Oh, there's a word for these things that I knew. So shred?
Maybe.
I don't know. I thought
they were
wrong.
Yeah.
There you go.
Thank you, Josh.
I was like, wait, what?
Hail
they
to the Brits. So the top rung
this
is worth
one.
This
is why we never should have left.
Yeah. We would still be spelling things with a lot of extra U's if we didn't. which leads into our next episode anyway. But yeah, the top rung is worth 1 point. So if you can get it on that one, the second one's 2 and the last one's 3. Okay. And you're trying to play to a certain amount of points. Again, looks so easy, but the cord bounces, wraps, runs, flies off.
When I played, it was with wiffle balls on either side of the string, which made it even more bouncy and ridiculous.
Also really hard to throw, because those things don't have any...
What's a wiffle ball look like?
It looks about the size of a baseball, it's made of plastic, and it has lots of holes in it.
Yeah, and it's hollow.
Yes. Yeah, we have those balls. We just don't call them wiffle balls. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of times you'll use them for like softball practice or something like that, like batting practice, because they don't go any distance.
Right.
And you can like hit a zillion of them. And
teaching kids how to play a game where they're hitting things with a bat because they don't go very far and they don't hurt if you get hit with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Tell us about this game you call 40-40.
Yeah. It's so these fall into that, because there's a few of them I have. They fall into the category of like sort of games you play outside, but they don't have many bits. They don't really have any bits to them, where you're just kind of, I don't know, playing a variant on hide and seek. So 40-40 is a bit like that. So there's you choose a tree or a post as a base. One player is it. He or she closes his eyes and counts to 40 while the others hide. When they've counted to 40, he shouts, "Coming ready or not?" No players should be behind.
Is Josh describing hide and seek, but reading it off the internet?
I'm reading off because I'm terrible at describing games. So the players should not be behind the base or next to it. The person who is it then goes to look for the other players. They have to get to the base without the person who is it seeing them. Immediately.
So you're trying to get there. Because in hide and seek, you're just trying to stay where you are.
Yeah.
But this, you're trying to get back to the base without getting caught.
Exactly. And so if they see you, then you still have a chance, because then you can run back to the base. And if you get there first and say, 40-40, I'm not it or something, then you're safe. But then if they get first and 40-40, I see Chris, then you're out and you've lost. Unless the very last person who hasn't been caught comes back and manages to get there and says 40-40, save all. Then everyone's safe and the person who's it has to go again.
Okay. So let me try to paraphrase this to see if I understand. I'm it.
Yes.
I close my eyes at the base.
Yes.
I count to 40.
Yes.
Okay. I open my eyes.
Yeah.
And in theory, everyone's hidden.
Yes.
Yes.
But they're trying to sneak to the base without me seeing them.
Exactly.
Why don't I just stay at the base?
Because...
That's not the point of the game.
I think you have to actually, to win as the seeker, you have to actually find them and see them and then run back. The whole point is you can't like... out them unless you see them. So it's kind of like, well, I could stay here at the base, but then they could just hide.
They can just hide forever. There's no way for you to win.
It's a stalemate.
Exactly. It's a catch 22.
So you're the only person who can make the move.
Right. Once I see the person and I say, Josh, I see you.
Yes.
Do you lose then?
No, but hang on. You have to run. You have to be at the base touching it and say, you see me. Or say, you've seen me at some point.
So if you see him and he's closer to the base than you are, like you've walked past him, he's got a chance to race you and be there first.
Yeah, and say his save.
And if I get to the tree before you get to the tree, and because I pushed you down as I ran by you.
That wouldn't happen. I'm much younger and more athletic than you.
This is... British, it's a gentleman's game, Chris.
I can see that.
But I don't know, you're kind of stocky. Maybe you could shoulder me out of the way, like a kind of rugby move. Yeah.
Are you calling me fat?
I said it in a really British, polite way.
So it sounds a lot like Kick the Can to me, except Kick the Can is a team sport. So there's one team protecting the can is the base. It's usually like a coffee can.
Okay.
And the other team goes and hides, and then you go look for them and but you're also trying to protect the can, because if the other team kicks the can, they win.
I see. Yeah,
that and if you like catch them, you put them in jail.
Yeah, that sounds.
But similar. They can also escape jail if somebody comes and frees them in jail.
There's another one called British Bulldog, and it's basically, imagine it's played on a field, and two ends of the field are the home bases where you're safe, and there's one person in the middle who's it. The people are all on one edge of the field, and they have to run to the other side without getting touched by the person who's it. If the person who's it touches you, you are also in the middle now on their team. And as people run back and forward, more and more people are getting touched and less people are there. And it's getting harder and harder because there's more people around trying to catch you.
See, I just rethemed that in my head with zombies.
Exactly. It's totally a zombie game because as soon as you get touched, you're infected, you're one of them.
Yeah. I think that would be a good, like... Zombie. Yeah.
Every kid plays this in the playground in the UK, and it normally gets banned at some point because it gets really violent. You know, kids like running and hitting and touching.
But they're very polite about it.
Oh, not when you're seven. We learn that later on. You're seven.
You haven't got to finishing school yet.
No, exactly. Yes, we haven't learned our P's and Q's yet.
I'm trying to remember the rules for Ghost in the Graveyard. We used to play a lot of Ghost in the Graveyard, and I remember it being essential to like have a house or something that you're like going around. Because, like, there's...
How does this work?
I have no idea. I don't remember. I'm going to have to look it up now.
Was there, like, people it and people not it with their teams, or...
I think there was one person who was it.
So, I've got another one I can just...
Yeah, you go ahead while I Google Ghost in the Graveyard.
Do you guys have Manhunt, which is the opposite of Hide and Seek, where there's one person who's it, but... No, hang on. No, there's one person who's hiding, and everyone else is not. And then they all spread out once it starts, and they're trying to find the person who's hiding. And one by one, they find them and they stay with them.
We call this sardines.
Ah, sardines. There we go. We call it Manhunt.
So wait, so then you're found and then...
So then you find the person who's hiding. You go hide with them. Yeah. So now there's two people hiding. And then and the next, like, person, there's three people hiding.
So the last person to find them.
So it becomes easier and easier to find you because you're, you know, like all of a sudden 10 people in a hiding spot. But the last person loses.
I'm learning so many things right now.
We call it sardines because you're like sardines in a tin. You're all packed in a tin.
Yeah, you're like in a closet hiding somewhere probably. Yeah.
Sardines.
Right. So Ghost in the Graveyard, there's one person hiding. And it involves yelling Ghost in the Graveyard when you find them. And then basically, so they're hidden somewhere around the house. And you're all looking for them. And when you find them, you all scatter and run back to base. And the ghost tries to tag as many people as they can on the way.
So this sounds like a really good game. So a lot of these games sound really good to, like, you're at an outdoor thing. You want the kids to just
disperse. Yes. Leave you alone. Yes. Yep. That's
Here's
what
this
all
game.
These are.
Go, do this. Yeah. I like that. Let's see what our listeners inputted, because Christy had actually Terrence mentioned when he thinks outdoor games, and Terrence, really hardcore gamer, so immediately goes to Jenga with 2x4s.
Oh yeah,
yes!
I played
huge
that.
Huge Jenga's really that. Fun.
Yep. Now I think I would probably use either 2x2s or 4x4s, so you have the square to it. But yeah,
and you can buy mega Jenga, like it's
can.
Right? Actually, there's a bar downtown where they have a table set up which is like mega Jenga. So right there. Christy mentions cornhole is big in Indiana and bocce ball as well, but it's like for outdoor games, anything that with dice is probably a good thing, because the biggest problem with taking board games outside, now we'll you know, our we have to give board games a nod, but is the wind. I think the wind is the number one. If it's raining, you're not really going to take your board game outside anyway. So I don't actually
see... You're not playing any of these games if it's raining.
Yeah, I don't see weather as a thing. But wind is one of those things where it's like all of a sudden, whew, and there's a gust of wind and all your pieces
Everyone
are blown
up. Everyone is running around trying to pick up the cards before...
Yep. And the game is ruined at that point. You're never going to get another person to play it. But dice, low aerodynamic... You know, coefficients or something. I'm making up those words.
No, I think so.
They're real words, but you're not using them.
I used all of them. I may not have used
in
them.
In a jumbled mess, but yeah.
But anyway, they wouldn't fly off the table as easily is what that equates to for those that are not as schooled in physics as I am.
Yeah, I was just like, no one would have understood this concept before you mentioned it.
At all.
Right.
At all. The point is, dice games... would make a good thing. So I think a King of Tokyo could work because even if the wind blew the monsters, then You're, well, no, King of Tokyo has a lot of cards.
I've seen Mega King of Tokyo at conventions and stuff. Can you not buy that or not?
No.
Okay.
No. That's just for demos.
Okay.
Yeah, and King of Tokyo has, well, at least with the expansion, I'm not sure what the base game does. I think the base game definitely has cards too. So then you have cards, so that's a problem. You could play Yahtzee.
The only problem is the score pad, but as long as you've got like a rock,
right,
you're good.
Does that mean you could also play that game that Chris loves that's a lot like Yahtzee outside?
You know, you might be able to play role player.
You might outside. Be able to. Because it's a neoprene mat, so those things aren't going to blow away. The dice go inside the mats. The only thing with those are there's a set of cards that like drive your goals. However, there's only, I think, 4 or 5 out at any given point. So again,
you could tuck them under the neoprene.
Yeah, you could tuck them under. I think role player would actually make a pretty good outdoor game.
I'm really impressed with you.
It's just like Yahtzee.
Yeah, I'm really impressed with him. I was about to say, because I only said that.
Yeah.
I only said that for him to take the bait. And then he just answered me really seriously without reacting.
Kitty and I have had an off-air discussion about this.
Yes.
And we've decided that I was right. And we decided that Kitty decided she was right as well. So we both agree that we're both right.
Okay.
But for different reasons.
Sure.
So...
Oh man, if our politics could be like that.
and I think, yeah, go ahead.
So the Yahtzee mechanic people talk about frequently as the re-rolling of dice, where you and you save some from your pool. So you roll a pool of like 6 dice, you save some of them, you re-roll,
like a slot
and then
machine.
Save and then re-roll. So role player does not use that at all.
Okay.
So it does not use the Yahtzee mechanic. However, it is a little bit like Yahtzee in that you are rolling dice and deciding where to score them. Because if you ask me, who plays quite a bit of Yahtzee, I hang out with kids, that's the hard part of the game. That's where you really like win or lose Yahtzee, is deciding where to score your dice. You know, take that loss on the ones. You went for 6s and you only got 3. You're not going to take that score for 6s, that's going to ruin your game. You want to take that as 1-1 and let that just be a loss.
Yep.
Right.
So in that respect, it does make sense because you are trying to maximize the score potential of each die.
Yeah. And as long as I don't let you guys know how much it bothers me when you compare it to Yahtzee, you'll stop doing it.
Yeah. No, you've learned well. That's good.
Another game that's just not at all like Yahtzee, Pyramid Arcade.
Yes.
I think this, and we've talked about this for a number of different things, plastic pyramids, weatherproof. Most of the games, if they use anything besides the pyramids, it's dice, and they're very easy. Some of them will have boards, but even the boards in the box are plastic for most of them. There's some that are like cardboard. So I would say half the games in the box would make great like picnic table games or outdoor games. Homeworlds, which I've talked about a lot, listen to earlier episodes, we talked a lot about Homeworlds, is just, you know, a set of pyramids. And you can play that pretty much anywhere. Now, the pyramids can be a little light, so if it's a super windy day, there might be a problem. But Sydney and I played this on the cruise next to a pool outside on the top of the ship, and we played Homeworlds like repeatedly and never had any problems. So this is another game that's really good. You know, the whole box is good for like outdoor play.
We forgot to talk about shuffleboard.
Oh, yeah.
Did we forget?
But hang on. Can you play shuffleboard just in your own backyard?
You need a board.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's mostly played on ships because it's like painted onto the deck. Oh, and it's like a wooden like set thing.
Another really cool game that I had no idea even existed before I came to America.
Well, most Americans don't know either until you hit about 60.
I think it's just an old game.
Well, actually, the bar ones, those are relatively new. And
really?
I'm saying relatively. So shuffleboard itself, and I don't know the history, but I should probably look it up. But I'm going to speak with authority so like, everyone will believe me.
It's like curling, but without the ice.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And traditionally, I think it was played on ships.
Yes.
Right.
When you were taking your transatlantic, you know, cruise, because that was the way that you got from one side of the Atlantic to the other, you played shuffleboard on the deck because it was killing a lot of time.
Yep. Nice. And then they took that and adapted it and made shuffleboard tables for indoor use. I've only ever seen them in bars, but I'm sure you could see them in someone's basement somewhere. And then sawdust was what would be on the board. But the traditional shuffleboard does not have sawdust.
Right.
It's just a slick surface.
Varnished sort of. And the deck wasn't like wet or greased or anything.
I don't think so, no. It was just kind of
highly polished.
Yeah, and then the metal on it would slide well on the wood.
You got like the pole that you use to push them.
Oh, you had a pole.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Nice.
It's really fun.
Shuffleboard. Yeah, because
we played in my like middle school gym class.
Yeah.
We learned all the scoring and stuff.
I'm going to throw a couple more actual games out there.
All right.
Junk Art. This is a new... So a lot of dexterity games are actually would be really good for outdoor play because it's the pieces tend to be a little bit more heavy. Mm. You know, something like Flick 'em Up could work. There's some standees there and that could blow over, but and you need a smooth surface for that. But Junk Art, what you're doing is you're trying to stack like just random pieces of wood, basically, based on what you have a goal of what you're trying to build, and then you're building this up. And with a little bit of a breeze, it actually adds a little bit more challenge to it.
Yeah.
So, and we saw this one at Origins this year.
We did.
And in the giant version.
They did have the really cool giant demo version.
Yeah. So I think that would make a really cool like outdoor game. And a lot of dexterity, like I said, a lot of them.
Yeah, pick up sticks. You can get giant versions of that.
Kerplunk is a really good one. Mm-hmm. Kerplunk. It's a plastic tube.
I think I say this every single time.
Plastic sticks, and you've got the marbles, and you pull out one stick at a time and try to get
the least amount of marbles. We went to the Secret Cabal meetup at Origins, and they were playing Kerplunk. I think they turned a pool table into a Kerplunk table. So
I don't even know how you do that, but that sounds
amazing. You just put the Kerplunk tube in the middle of the pool table.
Oh, okay.
So that was just... They're like, pool, no. We're playing Kerplunk. Right. So drop that down. Werewolf obviously would make a fine outdoor game. I think, honestly, these days, I would say Witch Hunt is a better one.
Yes.
But both of these games are good, or Mafia. Any of those games are good because once you're dealt your card, you just tuck it away. And all you have to do is, like, you know, put that in a pocket or something. Don't put it in your back pocket and just... put it someplace where it's not going to get...
Girls are at a disadvantage because they don't have good pockets. Yeah. Just saying.
Bring card sleeves. So bring card sleeves, and then you can say, okay, this is mine. And once you have your role, you can just play the game. I think it's...
We played a lot of this in cars growing. I did road trips with like youth group, or I went storm chasing a couple times, and that was a big time killer in the car when you're on big long road trips. We played a lot of Mafia, which is basically Werewolf.
Yeah, and someone, I think it was Michael, may have mentioned Two Rooms and a Boom as also an option. This one is mostly played at conventions, but if you had a large outdoor gathering, you could play it there too. It's a team-based social deduction game where everyone has a role and you're trying to figure out who the president is and who the bomber is. And the bombers win if the bomber is in the room with the president at the end of the game, and the president wins if he's not. So you're trying to like, do I trust you? And you have a role and an allegiance, so you can show your allegiance to anyone if you want to. You can't show your role, though. It's like, who do I trust? Who don't I trust? I think we need to do this. I think we need to do that. Trying to get voting blocks together. And that one is, again, it's very stand-up and a lot of moving around. Somebody is managing everything. But that would work really well outside as well. Michael, besides croquet, and he mentions horseshoes, he's like, love letter. Works fairly well. It's only, I think, 13 cards. So there's a tiny deck at the table, but mostly it's just the two cards that you're holding in a discard pile. Crokinole, I have not played. He mentions also Star Wars X-Wing. I'm not sure. The miniatures on a nice day, the miniatures actually would be kind of cool to have outside. So the X-Wing, like, this is a miniatures combat game. Mm-hmm. And it's dice and it's miniatures, essentially, is all you have. So that can be kind of cool. Any, like, really windy day, though, that's going to get...
They're on stalks, right? Because to make them look like they're flying. Yep. So, yeah.
They're on little stems. So, like, they are aerodynamically coefficient. Yeah. Yeah.
I still don't think you're using it.
Right, no.
Yeah. No. That time I wasn't even trying. Also, Michael, Crossmasters Arena, I'm going to have to challenge you on that one. There's like a zillion cardboard pieces on that one and so many angles. But you did. I think you had a question mark there. Oh, and Michael's the one that mentioned Two Booms and a Boom as well. Also, he mentioned that like something like Code Names with a tray that you put the words in would work really well. And you can get like 3D printed trays so they can like, okay, here are the words. And once the words are dealt, everything else is in the box. So that would be make a really good,
yeah,
good outdoor thing. Also mentioned Insider or Werewords would work out really well.
Yep.
Werewords probably because it has a lot more fiddly bits. I think Insider may be more suited.
So we played Werewords and we were in a place where there was not a lot of easy seating. So we just dismissed the chips and went with they can only say yes, no, maybe.
Yes, no, maybe. Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, it does eliminate the one way of winning where you run out of chips, but it didn't affect gameplay that much for us.
Yeah. Yeah, I think yes, no, maybe is fine. And the app is really easy.
Oh yeah.
So Werewords is we talked about in a previous episode. Essentially it's 20 questions with werewolves. And then Exposed, which I also haven't played, but apparently easily modified for outdoor play. Now, Andrew, he posted just a link to a game called Cub, K-U-B-B. And go to Board Game Geek, go to the thread. He has a link to it on Wikipedia, and I'll also put it in the show notes. It looks very, very interesting. And it's wooden pieces and you need a set of it. You need like a cub set.
You're being very mysterious, Chris.
It's because I don't understand it.
But why don't you want to talk about it? You want it to be like a surprise for people? Is this
what I am honoring Andrew's
method
of introducing this game.
But people are dying to know about it.
Click onto the podcast thing. I'm going to have, there'll be a link there. Click on that and...
Oh, this looks very mysterious.
can I see a quick picture?
So, this is the Google image search.
It's very involved. There's pieces and wow.
Yeah. So I don't want to spoil it for anyone.
Okay.
It just seems...
No, it's good. You've built a lot of suspense. People are going to go and look now.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, it's going to become all the rage now.
Definitely. I'm going to throw out my pick for a good game to play outside is Scheherazade.
Yeah.
That one would be pretty easy. Yep. It is a 1-2 player game only, so perfect if you're just doing like a couple picnic.
Yep. So we talked about this in our Origins episode. These are really heavy square tiles, which would lay down very easily multiple places. And it can be a co-op game. So if it's just two of you and you want to play, it requires a little bit of table space, but a picnic table would be completely fine. Like that's would be no issues there. What other games did we get? Anything with like a deck of cards. So deck of cards are fine. What I would recommend for outdoor play though is get a plastic deck of cards. They're a little bit slicker, so I don't use them as traditional for everything. But they're more durable, they're waterproof. They work out really well for if you're on a cruise ship. We have to pick our games for our wedding cruise because we're going to have a game night on the cruise. So we're like, all right, can't be too big. A couple involved, but like Mechs versus Minions might be a little bit too big. Gloomhaven probably a little bit too big, but maybe something like, well, Zaya is actually big. I mean, all the games I'm thinking about are really big right now, but yeah, those are not good outdoor games either.
No.
Don't do it. Feast for Odin. 18, like 80 of your pieces have just flown away and you'll never see them again.
As much as I love Carcassonne, it's terrible for outdoor.
Yeah. Oh, Christy mentioned Hive. Hive is a really good one too. It's little, I want to say ceramic, but they're like heavy plastic pieces. I'm sure you can make them out of a number of things, but they're heavy plastic hex pieces and there's a drawstring bag that goes with them.
Nice.
And it's like a two-player, tactics game with bugs, which makes like a perfect picnic game if you're like, oh, the beetle and you're trying to get after the queen bee. And so Hive is a good one. Anything else?
Oh, that's all from me.
I'm tapped.
All right. Well, that was amazing that we made it that far. All right. So I just want to thank everybody. If you're interested in following us on Twitter, you can follow me at Game Master Chris. You can follow us at Tabletop Game TLK. We are on Facebook at / Tabletop Game Talk Podcast. We really need to worry about that tongue twister branding thing. And if you're interested in following us on Patreon, not following us, but supporting us on Patreon, that's tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon. Or if you just go to the base website and click Patreon, or if you go to Patreon and search Tabletop Game Talk, all of those things will get you there.
Yawn.
But what's not yawn is if you are a patron, you never have to email us to enter a contest. You're automatically entered. And depending on the level, you get bonus entries. And you also get our undying appreciation and thank you. And Josh loves it when we have new patrons because that makes the list at the end even more friendly. Yeah,
it's love it.
All right, Josh, why don't you take us out?
Indeed. Well, thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So consider leaving us an iTunes review or email us with comments and questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. Finally, a huge thank you to our patrons, Emil Jiljam, Shane Poole, George, Adam Harrison, Sam from New York, Tom Bly, Jason Strong, Terence Miltner, Stephen Seitz, Alex Brown, Michael Ohl, Josh Arntz, Trevor Olson, Brian Arnold, Sean Kelly, Joseph Lee, John Merkel, Daniel Shepard, C. Marie, Rudy Lou, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Huang, Mike Smith, Stephen Phillips, Caleb O'Brien, John Lewis, and Jennifer Engelbrecht. Until next week, when we talk about word games and or Dice Tower Con, keep playing games and having fun.
I keep getting confused at the beginning of the show that George and Adam Harrison share a last name.
Do they share a last name?
No, we just keep saying George and Adam Harrison.
All right, we'll put George's last name in there. He doesn't listen anyway, so he won't even notice.